broadcasting from Indianapolis, Indiana.
USA.
You're listening to Forgotten Favorites.
Forgotten Favorites.
On the Worldwide Legend.
Visit our new website at legendoldies.com. Request a song. See what's currently playing. View the weekly schedule in your local time zone and learn more about your favorite DJs. Listen to talk shows when you want with your computer, Victor Stream, or iPhone, including All Things Radio, ATR Extra, Coffee Club, and Sports Lounge Live. Connect to our Zoom voice chat rooms to talk with us live using your computer, iPhone, or telephone. All this and much more at legendoldies.com. Welcome to Sports Lounge Live, a weekly talk show covering baseball, basketball, football, NASCAR, plus the latest sports news, both pro and college. Hear past talk shows on your phone by calling the Conversation Station or as a podcast on your iPhone, Victor Stream, or computer. Visit legendoldies.com for links to automatically connect via your computer or iPhone. Call the sports aficionados at area code 646-876-9923 and enter the PIN 287-723-4600, followed by the pound key twice. And now, your hosts, Chris Devon, Perry Lester, Sean Platts, and Bill Sparks.
Well, a good evening from nicer Indianapolis, Indiana. A busy, busy, busy sports week to talk about. Let's turn it over to Chris.
Hello. Well, first of all, this is May 5th, so happy Cinco de Mayo. And it dawned on me, because we were here for St. Patrick's Day as well, that Cinco de Mayo and St. Patrick's Day are always on the same day of the week. So that's kind of interesting that you can pick, you know, depending on what part of the country you're in. If you're in the Southwest, you get drunk on Cinco de Mayo. If you're in the Northeast and stuff, you get drunk in the Midwest. Maybe it's St. Patrick's Day, or do both if you really like to enjoy life.
Well, they celebrate St. Patrick's Day here too, believe me. They all.
Oh, there you go. All right. So
they do it.
This is May 5th, 2019, show number 40. So, and this is 9 months to the day when we started. I don't know what the 9 months signifies. We'll let somebody else figure that out. Anyway, so we have some interesting stuff. We knew that we would be talking about the Kentucky Derby, but we certainly didn't know that we'd be devoting as much of the show to it as we're going to, because we had some historic events yesterday in Louisville in the rain, and so you're going to actually hear the whole Kentucky Derby and the whole 5-minute clip of the Kentucky Derby and the aftermath. So that'll be the first thing right off the bat. Then we'll do the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs. We will do a couple of, in and among there, we'll do a couple of Hall of Fame deaths that we need to report and talk about some folks. Then we have baseball, of course. Then we're going to talk a little bit of media stuff. Can't leave the media out. We have a big purchase that we'll talk about, and a sort of a gaffe by a talk show host, a famous one, Mike Francesa.
Well, it'll be an incident with a football player that happened, but then later the media part of it, which comes
right,
in. So it's
right.
Kind of tying football and media together.
Football draft and media. So, Sean, why don't you do the numbers, and then we'll get into it.
All right. If anybody wants to call in, of course, you do 646-876-9923, or you download your Zoom app on your smartphone or computer, then you do 287-723-4600, hit the pound key twice. Star 6 raises your hands. Our Star 6 mutes you. Star 9 raises your hand. Alt Y raises your hand on the computer. If you want to check out our buddy Ringside Robert, who you hear from time to time in his boxing podcast, ringsidereporter.com, or 773-572-7781, or get it on your SoundCloud. And my wrestling line shooting the you know what with Sean, 773-572-7867. I'm reviewing the documentary The Last of the Von Erichs. And of course, if you want to leave us any comments, questions, criticisms throughout the week, if you're listening anytime and you're not available on Sunday night, or even if you're listening live and you think about something during the week, 773-572-7715. Hit the pound key when you hear the show, and just do not mark the message private. That way we can all hear it. And so, speaking of, as I mentioned, wrestling, this is something that is almost out of what has been pulled in pro wrestling with the little switcheroos and coming back. It's almost very much a wrestling move, but yesterday we had the 145th Kentucky Derby, so very interesting stuff.
Okay, so Bill is going to play that in a minute. We'll be hearing Mike Tirico from NBC, and Larry Comas is the guy who's going to give you the race. And then the I don't remember who the color men were with Mike Tirico that we're reviewing after the race. But
Eddie Olchek was there. I forget who else was there. But now
Jerry Bailey. That's the jockey. Yeah.
I will say in real time, it was about a 25-30 minute. Thing, but NBC did a good job of editing out a big portion of it and getting it down to right around when the decision. So you're not going to hear 30 minutes of back and forth what's going on, but it's a very historical Kentucky Derby. I guess historic Kentucky Derby is the right word.
It is. Okay, so Bill, if you got that ready, we can go, I guess.
And it'll be up in.
Yeah, just by the way, you can call in while we're waiting, and you feel free to comment on this too when we get going. So, maybe we have it.
Okay, well, we'll talk until Bill is ready. Yeah. But definitely the first time
horses in load, all the work and all the talk, all the handicapping is done. It's time for history with the call of the 2019 Kentucky Derby. Here's Larry Comas.
Thank you, Mike. Spinoff has moved into the starting gate. There's just two left to load. Country House is coming up to line now under Flavian Pratt. And the last one to load will be the horse that's never won a race, Bodie Express. And he will come up to the last spot in line. They're all in line. We're ready for the start. Security and Vekoma had good beginnings, and they go out to the early lead in long range. Tani's close to, and there goes Bodie Express on the outside into the early mix. So they will lead the way early on. And then it's War of Will running in fifth on the inside. Spinoff is sixth. Improbable is seventh position in between horses. Then Cutting Huber to the outside, followed by Country House. The Code of Honor, Tex, and Luska Parfait. By My Standards is alongside about 10 lengths off the lead. Brain Magician rides the rail into that turn, and then comes Poster alongside of the Gray Tacitus. Break of another 2 lengths more. Back to Win, Win, Win. Game Winner is in behind him. He's second last, leading Japan's Master Fencer to the backstretch. So on to the backstretch they go, and through this first quarter mile in a sensible 46.62 seconds. Maximum Security leads the way by 3/4 of a length. Long Range Tani pressing the pace under John Ford on the outside second. Or Will is down toward the inside under a snug hold in third. Then it's Bodie Express fourth. Improbable behind horses in fifth. Vekoma sixth on the outside. Then it's Code of Honor who rides the rail into the far turn. Country House is alongside, and then Spinoff. Pluska Parfait is next, and on the inside comes Tax. Game Winner is wide on the turn, beginning to pick up his stride near the back of the pack. But Maximum Security continues to lead the way. Midway on the far turn, he's a length and a half in front. War of Will is second. Long Range Tani third, and four wide, and moving up is Country House's Bodie Express. Plummets through the field, and here comes Code of Honor, and he bursts through an opening on the inside of Maximum Security, and they're into the stretch. Country House on the outside. Code of Honor down toward the rail. Maximum Security keeps on fighting. War of Will is there too as they come to the final furlong. It is Country House on the outside. Maximum Security, so dead game. He keeps battling on. Maximum Security. Country House 1-2 down to the line. Maximum Security wins the Kentucky Derby. And then it was Country House second, followed by Code of Honor third. And in behind them, Master Fencer, who was closing late inside of Tacitus. It's Maximum Security. He's never lost a race, and he wins it under Luis Saez.
There is an objection that has been posted on the board, so it is unofficial for the moment. There you see the unofficial order of finish.
He did come out at the top of the stretch, nearing the top of the stretch. He impeded the one horse, War of Will. Mm-hmm.
Maximum Security moved out of lane before he was clear, forcing the rider of number one, War of Will, to check up a little bit.
Now, at that point, the 20, the runner-up Country House, whose claim foul was in the outside yellow cap. It actually happened before that.
It did not affect number 20. He didn't have to steady because of this, but the one horse did have to steady. War of Will.
Coming to the top of the stretch, maybe about a 16th of a mile before the quarter pole, is where Maximum Security ducked out. He did bother War of Will, definitely. but it's hard to see that he did anything to Country House.
So here we see him as we're going into the far turn. This is the 3-furlong pole, the green and white pole. There's their passing right now. War of Will, the horse with a white stripe on his face, directly in behind the horse with the pink silks. Maximum secured. Now he has a lane to run, so his jockey is taking him outside of Luis Saez and Maximum Security. Right there is where number 7, Maximum Security, came out a lane or two, forcing War of Will to steady. It's on a spot of the racetrack where it's very hard to determine exactly how much he impeded him, but you could tell by the reaction of Tyler Gaffleon on War of Will that there was definitely some contact. Yes! They disqualified him.
They did. So for the first time in the history of the Kentucky Derby, the horse that crossed the line first has been disqualified. After the objection, Country House wins the Kentucky Derby with Flavien Prat at 65-1.
Do you think he should have stayed up?
I don't know. I got to look at it.
One of the longest shots in history to win the Derby after one of the longest waits ever after the Derby.
Okay.
And there we go. Well, you've now heard it, and that's the first time in 145 years that that's ever happened.
That's right.
Yes.
And he paid, if you had a $2 ticket on that horse, you would have gotten $132.40 for your $2. That is not a bad
and
day's work.
The trifecta with him, I think, paid like $3,500. The exacta was $5,800 or something like that. And it was.
They said there were people that were scrambling looking for their tickets because they threw them down when they saw the race. Ah, he came in second. Who cares? And then they were all scrounging on the ground in the mud or wherever they were looking for their tickets. And so, of course, the second horse was Code of Honor, and the third one was Tacitus. So those were the win, place, and show. And this is the first time that a result has been changed since 1968, and that wasn't on the day of the race. Of course, they do drug tests on these horses after the races, and butazolidone was the drug in question, and it was a drug that was not legal in Kentucky, and I don't know whether it was legal in other states or whatever, but Dancer's Image had taken that, had been using that drug up to that time, and it was illegal, and in 68, on the Monday after the Derby, they declared him disqualified, and Forward Pass was given the race. So that's the only other thing that was anything like this.
But this is the only time an on-track decision has ever caused the disqualifications. And, you know, it's the only time. And like I said, they've had other incidences where there's been finishes, but they're like, oh, go ahead. You know, and even the people on the broadcast, what you didn't hear, they were thinking, oh, you know, you could tell they were thinking, they're just going to go ahead and, you know, they're not going to overturn. They saw where things are going. They're not going to do this. This basically would have been the equivalent of coming back and overturning the call in the Saints-Rams games and going, okay, Saints, you guys won. You're going to the Super Bowl. You know,
The difference with this is a rule. They were saying, I remember one of the parts of the delay, and Mike Tirico brought this up, and he brought it into perspective, because he said, you know, this is like, is it a foul in the first quarter? Is it a foul in the fourth quarter in basketball or in football? You know, it's the same kind of thing that you have, or penalties in hockey. We were talking about that last week. And, you know, so the deal is, somebody said if this was the third race on a Tuesday afternoon, he'd be disqualified. So he was disqualified. I mean, that's the way sports should be. You know, if you violate the rules, and, you know, the horse rule, it's dangerous. These horses are going, if you ever figured out how long it takes to run the 2 minutes, they're going about 40 miles an hour. They're not fooling around out there. And you can't have somebody, you know, doing anything unpredictable because you've got a jockey and a horse that have to react to that. And that's very difficult. So that's why the rules are so strict.
And he did get spooked. They're thinking it was, because it was a very muddy track. They had storms all day yesterday. I mean, it was a sloppy track to begin with, and I think he got spooked by a mud puddle, and it caused him to veer around, you know, around the second turn, which caused War of Will to alter his you know, his path, and then it cost several others, because War of Will, if he had kept going, there would have been a fall, which would have been a major pileup. And he went from finishing first, he was undefeated, Maximum Security was, to he placed 17th in this whole situation.
Now,
you know,
the interesting thing will be how this affects the run up to the Preakness. I'm sure this that Country House will run and so forth, but normally it's a horse that's well thought of. This is kind of a lower echelon horse. So he's still not going to be the favorite. It's still going to be, you know, Maximum Security, especially if it's going to be a nice day in Baltimore. You know, these other guys, the other horses that we're hearing about, top three or four, are going to be the favorite. So I wonder, it'll add excitement to see if this underdog can do it again, but he did it under strange circumstances. So nobody's, I don't think, going to expect a Triple Crown, whereas if the favorite wins, then you kind of do expect a Triple Crown, and that brings a lot of ratings in.
Maximum Security, they were expecting to have another two-year-in-a-row Triple Crown thing. They thought, is this going to happen? They were already expecting him to do this because he had never lost a race. Where Country House, remember, he was in the 20 spot also. A lot of people forget that.
And the only way they would ever cancel a race, because someone was asking me about this earlier today, is if it were Lightning. Lightning is the only way they would. Jerry, what do you got?
Okay, well, I talked to a sighted friend about the race after it was over, and she thought that it was a remote possibility that Maximum Security might have bumped War of Will, but she didn't see anything when it came to any interference with Country House.
No, it was War of Will,
and the other horse that he may have affected was it Long Range Toddy or
Toddy.
Something?
Like
that.
Long Range
Toddy and War of Will were the two that affected, and it was not one of those horses. It was not the jockeys for either of those two that filed the protest. They didn't say which jockey it was, but it was
it was Country House's jockey.
Country House and War of Will. Mm-hmm. War of Will too, and Country House. But now the reason Country House did it, they were looking at the whole race and they said, hey, you know, this could get us the win. So obviously they wanted to get in. You know, if no one else was going to do it, they were going to do it. There's a lot of money there, but it wasn't affecting. No one in Country House wasn't saying it was affecting them. That's not the point. The point is, did he taint the race by affecting other horses, which changes the course of the race? That's why it happened.
If nothing else, it's going to make people want to watch even more.
The ratings should be pretty high.
On May 18th, it definitely is. I mean, that's one thing I will say. And you know what? People talk about the Kentucky Derby a lot of times, but when it's the biggest story of the weekend, when every sports radio and TV show you turn on, they're all talking about it. I mean, it was on non-sports talk shows talking about it. So, I mean, I'd like to see any publicity is good publicity. I joke, though, how this is almost, as a wrestling fan, how this is very similar to the old days where, you think the guy won the belt, and then, oh, no, we changed the finish. We saw that he did this. Yeah, we changed it. Okay. It's a wrestling booking, but I don't think it was not intentional, though.
No.
Yeah.
It's not scripted like that.
The bad part of the analogy with the Saints is we now we do have a rule. See, it's going to be different in the NFL. If something comes up like that happened with the Saints and the Rams, you do have a rule where you can review that and have a booth review about an interference, but you can't go back. And I get what you're saying, Sean, but football and other sports can't go back. Horse racing always has because of photo finishes. So you always had that possibility to go back and review the races. That was the first sports replay. I mean, I remember races being delayed. I remember listening to a Derby in about 59. I'm sitting there waiting, because they were doing a photo finish and I don't think it was even for first. I think it was between second and third, but they couldn't put the result out until the photo was done. It took 15 minutes. You know, it was a lot longer. You know, they didn't have the technology they do now. And this was a lot more complex because it was affecting, you know, the whole race. You know, many horses were very close together at that point. But okay, so I guess anybody else got anything out in the Derby? Or are we going to move on to the NBA here?
We can move ahead and caller. If callers want to talk about it when they call in, they're welcome to do so.
Right.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So for the NBA, I'm going to start back on Friday because basically these series have sort of been going one or two a day and, you know, whatever. So on Friday, Milwaukee came in here to TD Garden and beat the Celtics 123-116. And they took the 2-1 lead in the series. And the game four will be tomorrow night at 7:00 Eastern here at the TD Garden. So the Celtics behind 2-1. Now, Friday night, before we get to that, we need to say that game was kind of close till the middle of the third quarter. And then the Bucks pulled away, got up to about 16 points. Celtics made it a little closer, but that was it. But we were saying, where are our close games in the NBA? What is going on? Well, we started to have close games later on Friday night as Portland beat Denver 140-137 in four. four overtime. This is only the second four overtime game in NBA playoff history. The first one between the Celtics and the Syracuse Nationals at the Boston Garden, March 21st, 1953. That's Bob Cousy and Ed McCauley on the Celtics, Dolph Shays on Syracuse. It was a series deciding game that the Celtics won. And, back then it was a lot easier to do that because you didn't have a shot clock in the NBA till 55, 56. So you were more apt to have that kind of thing, but it didn't happen. It only happened twice, Friday night and March 21st, 1953. So there you go. And so 140-137, that put Portland on the board. They're trailing in the series 2-1. And as we speak, Portland and Denver are playing in Portland, game four. And that started at 7 Eastern. So maybe we'll get a score on that if we can. Maybe Perry will grab one for us when we have a minute.
Yep. Good thing, Chris, that was an ESPN game, because I would almost be assured that at some point that thing will get on ESPN Classic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yesterday, we hadn't had any overtimes. We got another overtime game in the NBA as Houston beat Golden State 126-121 in Houston. That was an overtime game. That means the Warriors lead Houston 2-1. And game four of that one is, tomorrow night, I think, at
9:30 Eastern.
9:30, that's right. Yeah. So
9:30 Eastern,
tomorrow,
because, it's going to be a local, because the fans in Houston get to go to a home game at 8:30 at night. Yep.
That's right. Well, the East, I'll tell you what, these games at 8:30, and really it's probably 8:45, but you're right. But in the East, those like Thursday night games, they don't start at 8 o'clock. They're like 8:15 anyway. So, everybody's dealing with this stuff to a little degree. But the Central time zone's just in a, they're kind of stuck in between. The same thing happens with hockey and so forth. Their games get to be 9:30 and because the other games are at 7. So then, So we have the Celtics game at 7 o'clock tomorrow, hosting Milwaukee. Houston at 9:30 hosts Golden State. And then today, Toronto beat Philadelphia 101-96. So that means that series is tied 2-apiece. That was the first game four. So they're tied 2-apiece. And Tuesday at 8, the Sixers will meet Toronto in Toronto. And then, that was apparently Joel Embiid is saying after the game that he was not feeling well. He did not play well, that's for sure. But we have a significant anniversary. I hadn't talked to you guys about this, but this is 50 years ago today.
Before you get to that, okay. Chris, we can update the Portland game. It is at halftime. It is a Trailblazers 63, the Nuggets 57.
Okay.
And so, we are guaranteed at least one game six. Already.
So 50 years ago tonight, May 5th, 1969, was what is known as the balloon game. The balloon game is when the Celtics went into Los Angeles. Each team had won 3 in the series, but all at home. And this was the Celtics going, the Lakers had a home court advantage, and they went in there. In the program, it said that the after the Lakers win, not if the Lakers win, after the Lakers win, the USC marching band will do something or another, and balloons will be released from the rafters, coming down and all this other stuff. And, of course, the Celtics saw this, and that kind of got their attention. And they never trailed in the game. It was always close. I think they won by about 3 points. But the other significant thing about that game, a couple of things. Here was May 5th and the end of the NBA season. Just shows you how things have changed with the number of teams and the number of games and all that. The other thing is, that was the first, I was thinking back about this, that was the first decided on prime time championship. At night. Okay, you've always had the World Series, but that was always during the day. The first World Series night game was in 71. The Super Bowl didn't get moved to part of it is now in prime time. That didn't happen until about 85 or so. This was the first game. The next, everybody remembers the second one, which was the Willis Reed game, where he came back and the Knicks beat the Lakers. But this was the first one. It was a 9 o'clock game on a Monday night, and it certainly got great ratings. I think that may have helped to set up the idea about Monday Night Football, which was coming. It was slowly, germinating. But I think that really helped a little bit to have that primetime game.
Was it primetime for everybody, or just those of you in Boston, LA? Because remember back then, a lot of times
I see what you're saying, Sean. The game started at 9 o'clock, and they didn't have the tape delay system yet. That was when they started to do that, and I think that was more CBS's idea down the road. So this game was at 9 o'clock Eastern, so it was like a Monday night game was in the old days, 9 o'clock on a Monday night. So in Boston it was 9, and Chicago was 8, and LA was 6, And so it was all live for the whole country. That tape delay thing, I know what you're saying. That was a CBS thing in a couple of years that came in, but, you know, or maybe before that. You know, maybe ABC did some of it too. But yeah, no, that was just a straight up prime time championship deciding game. And that had never been seen before, to my knowledge, in the four major sports. So, you know, that was pretty cool and a great win for the Celtics. Bill Russell's last game. And there was a controversy because Butch Van Bredekoff was the Lakers coach, and he held Will Chamberlain out near the end of the game. He said he was hurt, but Chamberlain said he wasn't hurt. He could have come back in, but he hadn't been playing well, and it was just a capper, one of the big cappers of Lakers Celtics lore, that balloon game. So there you go. We had to throw that in as an NBA highlight meeting 50 years ago today. What were you gonna say, Sean?
I was going to say, but back to the current stuff, I'm going to say these, I mean, like I said, other than the Boston-Milwaukee, I mean, these last games, I mean, today, Kawhi Leonard, you know, everybody forgets. They were like, oh, where did Kawhi Leonard? Everybody forgets that he was, you know, a championship MVP back in, you know, 14, and, you know, they forget all about, you know, with the whole controversy with him and the Spurs and the back and forth, was he really hurt? And then, you know, but he really... He did, you know, he came into his own for Toronto today. And then, of course, Houston had to win yesterday or else it was probably over. So, you know, Houston, you know, pretty, I mean, we'll see what they do tomorrow. But yeah, that's,
you know, the one thing in these series is like, especially in the West, there, you know, which announcers you want to listen to in those series, because in the Houston Golden State, you want Golden State. And right. The other one, you want Portland. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
and you know it says something about Stan Kroenke and all the teams that he owns. He cannot pick announcers: the Rams, the Avalanche, the Nuggets.
Well, the Avalanche, okay. The Avalanche one isn't too bad, but the Nuggets,
yeah, he's not bad.
The Nuggets one is horrible.
And the Ram guy is okay. I can deal with him now. I'm getting used to him. He's much better than the Chargers guy. Let's put it that way. That's easy. Okay, we'll move on to the NHL then. And then we will talk about the playoffs there. And one series is already over. The Carolina Hurricanes swept the Islanders. They're 8-0, the Hurricanes are. They swept the Penguins, and now they swept the Islanders. They won on Friday night 5-2 and in Carolina, and they're waiting for the winner of the Bruins Blue Jacket series. And last night, the Bruins beat the Blue Jackets here in the Garden, the game that started right after the Derby. Well, it started before the Derby coverage was over because of that delay, but it started on NBC Sports for 5 minutes or something. But anyway, the Bruins won that game 4-3. So now they've taken a 3-2 lead in that series. And game six will be in Columbus tomorrow night at 7. So the Celtics and Bruins will be playing at exactly the same time again. It's happened when we have these situations, it happens 3 or 4 times, and it's happening on Monday night. So big night for the Bruins and Celtics fans. Back and forth they will go. And so the Bruins leading that series 3-2 and game six, you know, tomorrow night at 7. And then we have San Jose beat Colorado in the second game 2-1, and the Sharks take a 3-2 lead, and they will also play Monday in Denver, and that'll be at 10 o'clock. And we now will have a game 7 in this round, as St. Louis beat Dallas today 4-1. Ben Bishop was hurt on one of the goals, and I'm not sure whether he'll be okay. He got hit where there's a little spot below the mask and above the chest protector where there's, you know, where your neck is, and he got hit in the process of a goal being scored. The play continued. The goal was scored. It couldn't be stopped because it was, you know, he was not in major distress. So I'm thinking he'll be back. And they pulled him, though. They kind of knew they were going to have a game 7 as soon as that happened. So they pulled him 4-1. St. Louis beat Dallas. So game 7 will be Tuesday at 8, because, again, it's the only game. So that's the reason it's going to be Tuesday at 8 in Central Time, because 8 Eastern, 7 Central, because it's the only hockey game on Tuesday. And we don't have a game tonight in the NHL because the Islanders got swept by the Hurricanes. But we do have a death to report in the NHL, a significant one. Red Kelly. Red Kelly was 91 years old. He played in Detroit from 1947 through 1960 as a defenseman, and then he became a center when they traded him to Toronto. What had happened was he had played with a broken foot in part of the 59-60 season, and he let a reporter know that because, hey, you're supposed to be tough there and keep playing and not mention it. Well, he did. And, you know, nowadays, that'd be crazy because his agent would have been all over Twitter and everything talking about it. But anyhow, he had not had as good a year. So Detroit said, well, you're going to talk about such things like that. We're going to send you off to the Rangers. And the Rangers are terrible. Bruins and Rangers were horrible back then. Well, he retired rather than go to the Rangers. So they then worked out a deal with Toronto, and they didn't get as much for him. But he became a center when he went to the Maple Leafs. He got there for the 60-61 season. He was there through 1967. He won six cups, three for Detroit and three for the Maple Leafs. In Detroit, he won in 7 cups, 50, 52, 54, and 55 in Detroit, and then 62 A cups. I'm sorry, I'll get this right. 50, 52, 54, 55 in Detroit, 62 through 64, and 67 in Toronto. That's 8. I can count. Okay, he then, after he retired after the 67 season, we had the big expansion in the NHL, and he coached the Los Angeles Kings from 67 through 69. He coached the Penguins after that from 69 through 73. And then he came back and coached the Maple Leafs from 73 through 77. He was elected to the Hall of Fame in 1969. So there you go. And that's the way hockey does it. If you retire, you can be put in pretty much right away. And that's just the way they do it. So there you go. And so that was quite he was 91 years old, as they say. So there you go for, that's it for hockey. So anything else on that sport?
Go Blues. Go Blues.
Go Blues. That's right. Perry is a Blues fan.
So, Chris, okay. your team is still going. My team is still going. And I believe Robert is a Sharks fan.
And Robert is still going, too.
His team is still going.
That's right. So we're doing all right in hockey. That's true. Okay. So I guess right now, I guess I'll stick in the other Hall of Fame death, because this might be a good spot to put it in. You know, I hate to have to do death, but we do. It is part of life and part of sport. Gino Marchetti, an old Baltimore Colt. That's what he's known most for. He died. I'm not sure how old he was. I don't think I got an age on him, but I know I'm going to say he was about 88, 89, because he played for the Dallas Texans in 1952. Now, the Dallas Texans were the precursor of the Baltimore Colts. They actually folded during the 1952 season and then moved to Baltimore. So they have nothing to do with the Dallas Texans of the American Football League, who then later became the Kansas City Chiefs, or, of course, the Houston Texans, who are now in the NHL. So he played for them in 52, went to Baltimore from 53 through 64. He then he played four games. He retired for 65, came back for four games in 66 with the Colts. He won the championship with the Colts in 58 and 59. Of course, 58 being that great overtime game with the Giants that everybody talks about all the time, that put the NFL on the map. He was Pro Bowl for 11 times. And then he also, he was elected to the Hall of Fame in 1972. He was a defensive end, and he ran Gino's Restaurants, which were a sandwich shop, basically sort of like a McDonald's, I guess, a burger place. And people say the food was good. I used to hear ads for him on the stations, like from Baltimore and Philadelphia and stuff. They're down in the mid-Atlantic state, so we did not have them. But Gino Marchetti made his name in business, and he's one of the early ones. You know, some of the guys did, but nowadays different people have different restaurants and other businesses. And I knew he was a football player, and I knew he was the guy for the restaurant. I said, wow, that's really cool that he's, you know, got a restaurant and, you know, playing football. So that's pretty cool. So let's see. I guess it's time for baseball. So we will give you the standings going into today, and then we'll give you the results. Starting off, we have Tampa Bay in first at 21-12 in the American League East. The Yankees were 18-14 and 2.5 out. I'm going to try to give you the margins now that we're into May, and at least for the teams that are close, just so you can get an idea. Tampa Bay leading the Yankees by 2.5. The Red Sox today going in were 16-18, and that would put them 5.5 behind the Rays. Toronto at 15-18 would be 6 out, and then the woeful Orioles are 12-22. And you know, there's some teams that are on their way to massive losing seasons, and we'll see. There's three or four of them that are just going to be terrible. In the American League Central, we have Minnesota at 20-11 in first place, Cleveland at 18-13, and they are two games out. Detroit at 14-16, they're six games out. The White Sox at 14-17, 6.5 out. And one of the horrendous teams is the Kansas City Royals. They're at 12-22. And these teams are on their way to like 108 losses or so if they keep this pace up. In the American League West, we have Houston on top at 19-14. Seattle, 18-17, so that's a game and a half out. Texas at 15-16, so that's three out. And then the Angels are at 15 and 18, four out, and the A's at 15 and 20, I think five out. I'm doing this just off the top of my head, but I think that's right. So that's the American League West. So that's a pretty tight division. National League East, Philadelphia leading at 18 and 14. Atlanta, again, these are today, going into today's standings. Atlanta, 17 and 16, a game and a half out. The Mets, 16 and 17, two and a half out. Washington 14 and 18, and that would be, I think, four out. I'm sorry. Miami, another horrendous team at 9 and 23. In the Central Division in the National League, and we have a battle for first going on tonight, the Cardinals are 20 and 13 going into today. The Cubs at 18 and 12, so they're half a game out. So if the Cubs win, they take over first. If the Cardinals win, they hang on to first in the Sunday night baseball game that's underway now. Milwaukee at 19 and 16, and they are, two games out. So they're not far away. Pittsburgh at 500, at 15 and 15, so they're 3.5 out. Cincinnati 14 and 19, six out. In the West, the Dodgers are 22 and 13. Arizona at 20 and 13, only a game behind them. San Diego 18 and 16, and they've been playing all weekend. And we'll talk about that game, their third game. The Dodgers were going for a sweep. San Diego 3.5 out at 18 and 16. Colorado at 15 and 19, and the Giants at 14 and 19. So, for the results today, we had Tampa Bay at Baltimore. Was rained out. A lot of rain here in the East. We were just barely north. We've got some, but we were just barely north of it. But the Red Sox were in Chicago anyway. Didn't matter as far as the rain was concerned. Red Sox beat the White Sox 9-2. So that means they took 3 out of 4 from the White Sox. They lost a game Thursday night on a walk-off home run, but they scored 7 runs in the 8th inning to break a 2-2 tie. Xander Bogaerts hit a grand slam in that inning to seal the deal. Detroit over Kansas City 5-2, and I think that was in 10 innings. Miss A wouldn't tell me.
It was in 10 innings. It was a walk-off 3-run homer.
Okay, so Detroit beat the Royals in Detroit, I think. Walk off it would be. So Atlanta beat Miami 3-1. Now she did want to tell me that was 10 innings. I guess there's more Braves fans that have Miss A's than or something. Anyway, 3-1 Atlanta beat Miami in 10. Seattle over Cleveland 10-0. They wiped out the Indians. I think the Indians had won the first two games of the series, but Seattle came back with a vengeance on that one. Pittsburgh over the A's 5-3 in 13 innings. She wasn't going to tell me the extra innings, but finally she relented and she did. So the Pirates beat the A's 5-3. It's not been a good Eastern trip for the A's. They came in with a pretty good record and they had trouble in Toronto. They had trouble here and at least lost two in Pittsburgh. I don't remember what happened yesterday, but either way, they did not do well in the East. They finally get to go home and meet the Reds. Philadelphia beat Washington 7-1 in Philadelphia. Milwaukee swept the Mets this weekend by beating them 3-2. They had an 18-inning game last night, over 5 hours that the Brewers beat the Mets. Texas over Toronto 10-2. Colorado beat Arizona 8-7. San Francisco beat Cincinnati 6-5. That was in Cincinnati. San Diego over the Dodgers, 8-5. And I forget his first name, Renfrew.
Hunter Renfrew.
Hunter Renfrew.
He's from Mississippi State.
There you go. So the Bulldog came through, and Kenley Jansen was going for his third save in that series. And they loaded the base with nobody out. He got two outs because I listened to the bottom of the ninth. He got the two outs, and then Hunter Renfrew hit it out. And that was it for the Dodgers' hopes of a sweep, and the Padres won a big game there because, they're trying to stay in this race, and, they got Machado, so they're supposed to be in the race. Let's put it that way. Houston over the Angels in Monterrey, Mexico, 10-4. We had the in the last I knew, there was still a rain delay in New York with the Yankees leading 4-1 in the 8th inning.
That is still the situation.
Right, okay. It may be, since there's so little game left, they may just call it, and that'll be the end of it. And chances are that's what's going to happen. And then, of course, the Cardinals and Cubs are playing now, and I don't have any score on that.
The Cubs are leading 3-0 in the bottom of the fifth.
Okay. And then we had one baseball injury of significance. Corey Kluber, the great pitcher for the Indians, was hit on the arm with a line drive, a broken upper arm, and he's going to be out, I think, what do they think, about 2 months?
Probably a little bit longer than that, but that's okay. That's the guess.
Yeah. So So that is it on baseball. Anybody with any baseball?
We do have a couple of other notes, and Pam, we'll get to you in just one second here after we give you these two notes here. The Reds released Matt Kemp, so he could sign with anybody, free agent. And also, we've been following the Addison Russell situation, you know, with his 40-game suspension, which ended on Friday, and he was subsequently then optioned to AAA Iowa. And today in Omaha, Addison Russell and Ian Happ, both, you know, who've been on the big league roster for a while, hit homers, among other home runs, for the iCubs to beat Omaha 8-1. And the Cubs are actually doing very well through their whole system. Chicago is fighting now for first. Iowa's in first. Tennessee is in first. And even the lower A teams are doing well. So the Cubs are doing well in the minor leagues as well this year. So with that,
Bill, did you have a comment on the thing with Kemp, Matt Kemp?
The problem is with Matt Kemp was he just didn't fit in with the younger lineup they wanted to go with. He wasn't hitting that well, and it just, the outfield was too crowded, and they just brought up their number one prospect and Nick Senzel on Friday night.
And he's had a pretty good weekend.
Yeah, he did. He actually hit two home runs. One, the guy jumped over the wall, caught the ball, climbed the wall. But he did hit his first home run, but he's doing well. But Matt Kemp was on the disabled list. And I don't know, it just, the attitude, something was conveyed there that it just wasn't the right thing or the right fit for the Reds. Now, I like Matt Kemp, but I don't know if age might be getting to be a problem.
I'll bet somebody will pick him. Somebody, since all they would have to pay him is the league minimum, I'll bet somebody will take a shot.
Oh, sure.
Oh, he will probably.
The other thing, too, I always thought it was a strange signing, and I said so during the winter. If you're going to build with a young team, I mean, I didn't really see that making a lot of sense. And it's not like Matt Kemp, oh, I'm going to go see the Reds because Matt Kemp is playing. You know, it's more like you're going to go see the Reds so you can go get some chili somewhere. It's not really something that you're going to really hang your hat on. We're not talking about Manny Machado or Bryce Harper here. You know, he hasn't got that kind of you know, clout that you figure you're going to fill the seats with him. So
but
I didn't understand that signing. And, you know, it was a placeholder, really, and that's really what it was. And it lasted for just over a month.
And it just didn't work. But
well, and before we get to Pam, didn't they, Bill, want to technically play Senzel in center and move Scheveler back to right? Isn't that what they actually wanted to do?
Well, they put Scheveler's now in the minor leagues, so they've put Puig in right, and Scheveler went to the bench, and now he's went to the minor leagues. So he's out. Senzel's in. And Scheveler didn't start out very well, so that got to be a problem. And the pitching's been fairly good, but Scheveler wasn't doing the job, so he's now in Louisville. But drove in a couple runs today. Let me ask you one question about Addison Russell. Was that a surprise, and how long do you expect that to be?
It kind of was, but I think my thought is, at this point, with everybody playing well, who do you send down? Now, Daniel Descalzo left the game yesterday with an injury. I don't know how, you know, that may open up a spot or something. But at this point, that would be my only question is, who would you send down? Because everybody's playing well right now.
So, I don't know, but the Reds have some of the same issues. But let's see how this Senzel does. I think he's a transplanted center fielder, but is just a good athlete. So I think he's going to be okay. He's going to answer. Actually, the Reds today, even though they lost later in because of the bullpen, actually hit three home runs on three pitches in the first inning. You don't see that very often.
Yeah, I don't think Jeff Samardzija was probably very happy with that game. You know, at least with the start of the game, giving up home runs like that. Pam, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just curious. With the extra inning baseball that we've had, is that rule in effect where they start the man on second now?
No,
you know,
You
brought up something that I was about ready to bring up because I heard about it this morning. Now, last year, they started in the minor leagues when you go to the 10th inning, they put runners on first and second, before they start the inning. And I heard an interview with Sam Burnaby, who is the general manager of the Iowa Cubs. And he said, never, ever will that go to the major leagues. And I said to my wife at that point, I said, you wait. I said, I'll bet you it will. And with this game last night going 18 innings, it's already coming up today that how do we get the games to end quicker? Should we start with runners on first and second? Should we start with the bases loaded?
Oh, hell
you're
no.
You're hearing that discussion already. After
you know,
that last
deal
night.
With it. Go home. If you don't want to be there, go home. I don't care.
I agree with you.
You know, if you don't like it, go home. Nobody's making you stay there. You know, if you've got other things to do, if you've got a dinner date or you've got a whatever. I mean, it's like Jerry Trupiano used to have a joke on the Red Sox games at 4 o'clock. He said the stands start to empty out because the early bird special hits down in Florida and all the older people go to eat. So, you know, hey, it's the seventh inning. They're leaving anyway, so it doesn't matter. You know, and Dodger fans have been leaving for years. Just go home. You know, who cares?
I think the problem is the younger people, and I think that's what everybody always says when they make these changes. Well, the millennials just won't sit through.
Yeah.
To be truthful.
Well, that's their problem.
That's what I say. And I know we're a bunch of old codgers, but what I'm saying is you don't disenchant your regular fans to chase people you're never going to get anyway. Baseball can't have a pitch every 15 seconds. Millennials would like it to be basketball or football.
That's not right. Basketball
or football.
The millennials, you're either going to like baseball or you're not. They're going to screw around and make all these changes, and you're going to lose the fans that you already have.
Right.
And you'll lose potential new fans with some changes. It's going to be like, man, this is kind of a boring because, yes, okay, younger people are watching soccer. Soccer's done in 90 minutes, but that's soccer done in 90 minutes. All right. Also, people watch college football. College football games especially. Go watch the Texas Tech game.
Go watch
the Texas Tech game. 4 hours, four and a half. You know, yeah. I mean.
Oh, there were a lot of games last year that were averaging 3.5 and 4 hours.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. College football, that's a good statistic. Somebody should trot that out in September and figure out in the power conferences and run the baseball numbers against the football numbers, and they'd be very comparable, if not longer, for football.
I will say Big 12 games especially have a tendency to go long.
Well, Red Sox Yankees go long, so there you go. You know, you have certain rivalries. They said the White Sox have been playing long games because they don't have control. They're throwing the ball. They played 3 and 4 hour games consistently because they're walking everybody.
And we can fill in the Yankees game. That game has been called now.
Okay, that's what they expected on FAN. Chris Moore was on there, and that's kind of what he thought was going to happen. But anyway, to get back to you, Pam, I don't think so. Now, the one thing they could change, and we do have two other media stories that we want to cover, and we'll get to them here in a minute. But the one thing they are thinking of, and the commissioner didn't poo-poo it when they were when Joe Castiglione and Lou Maloney were talking to a home opener here for the Red Sox, was maybe having the shift so that you can shift, but you have to have two people on one side a second and the other two on the other side a second. They may modify the shift because that is something that's causing the strikeouts and causing some other, there's ramifications for that. And it's like in football, they've changed defenses. You can do things differently. Can't do some things in defense that you used to be able to do. So that's not unprecedented. That may be down the road, and that could help pace the play too.
Chris, I don't have a problem with minuscule changes like that, but I do have a problem when they want to be so radical just for the sake of another generation.
Now, I will say before we get off this that in the minors it can make a little sense for the organizations in the minors because you don't have as many pitchers. You got pitchers on pitch counts, and we can get into that some other time. But
your roster is only 23, not 25.
Right. So there's reasons in the minors that it might be practical, but not in the majors. That's just not.
Certain things like the visits to the mound, you know, that can things
that's
like
good.
That. You know, or
that's
walking
good.
Out of the box, you know, stepping out of the box, things like that. Those make sense, you know, and maybe, you know, little things, but, you know, you want to make things presentable, but there's other ways if you want the younger fan presentable. Get your players out there marketable. Get a Bryce Harper out there, make him marketable. Mike Trout, get those guys out there doing things the way back in the day you had Reggie Jackson, Pete Rose, those guys, you know, you had them out there, Willie Mays, Mickey Mantle, they were marketable.
Joe DiMaggio was Mr. Coffee, you know? Yeah,
but
you know.
Get them out there. Baseball doesn't market their their guys anymore. That's a huge part of getting somebody interested in a sport in today's, especially in today's society with the social media and the Twitter. Yep. And everything. Marketability is a big, and baseball has done a very, very poor job. And this is someone who grew up baseball. As a little kid, was my favorite sport, but baseball has slowly pushed me away. That's from, you know, from watching, taking a step back, you know, at that. They don't market themselves. Take a look at, I mean, out of the majors, they're probably the worst one.
What were you going to say, Pam?
Well, I was going to say that the Royals do a really good job of marketing their players, and their players.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, and that's good locally. I'm talking on a national level. Yeah. I know what you're saying. The Royals do. There are teams that do it very well, but baseball itself needs those guys nationally. You need to see Mike Trout. You need to see Mike Trout doing a Geico commercial or something. I don't know. Whatever.
I think in the Midwest, Pam, where we live, I think that the people here they become more attached to their players
right.
in a lot of ways
right.
than they do
yeah.
maybe in other places.
Well, you've also got to think about the idea that on the coast there's more to do than baseball.
That's right.
Yeah.
In the summer,
okay.
We've got baseball, or baseball.
Well, we got a couple of things we want to cover here with a few minutes to do it. Sean, why don't you talk about Sinclair and buying Fox Sports?
Okay, basically, it was announced this last week, it broke Thursday, Sinclair bought the 21 regional Fox Sportsnet channels, because what had originally happened, as you know, Disney bought 21st Century Fox from Fox. Now, Fox kept Fox, the Fox Network, Fox News, Fox Sports 1, Fox Sports 2, the Big Ten Network, and I believe the 2FX Network. They kept it. But National Geographic and the regional Fox Sports channel all went to Disney. Disney had to get rid of them, and Disney really didn't want them anyway. And the major, the teams, the basketball, hockey, and baseball teams that were on a lot of these regional channels really didn't want to deal with Disney, because Disney would run it as, oh, it's our channel, and you know, not as much control of their programming on there, so they were kind of worried. Sinclair stepped in, like I said, $10 billion. They bought them since they were unable to purchase Tribune Broadcasting. They said, hey, we're going another route. We'll get these regional Fox Sports channels. Now, remember, earlier this year, they announced the creation of the Marquee Sports Network for the Chicago Cubs, which comes online next year. They also purchased Fox's half of the YES Network, which also went to Disney, and Yankees didn't want to do business with Disney either. You know, and there's Yankees still have their 50%, and then some, and then, you know, Sinclair has their portion. So your Fox Sports regional channels are going to be Sinclair. Now, this right now, your teams still all have agreements. The cable agreements are still good. Now, I will say Sinclair is very tough dealing with media, with cable and satellite providers, because if you live in a city that has a station owned by Sinclair, there's been times where you've either lost your station for a couple weeks, or there's been a threat of it. You know, they've had, Sinclair and Mediacom have had pretty big battles. Sinclair and DirecTV had some battles. Sinclair and, you know, four or five of them have had pretty good battles. But Sinclair says they want to make these for the individual teams that they have contracts with. They want that content. And in a weird way, it could help. We talked about the Marquee Sports Network, the Cubs Network. It'll give some other programming when they don't have Cubs programming, because remember, they have college football, college basketball,
right.
College baseball. They have deals plus other high school stuff. So, and it will help people like in Perry's area for the Fox Sports Midwest, since they're going to be under the same umbrella, they might get Cubs games again.
They might. Hey. I read a couple of articles yesterday about that, and Sinclair says, at least at this point, you won't probably even notice any difference. At least at this point, things are going to stay the same as they are. So
I'm wondering if the Sinclair,
channels can happen. You know,
Sinclair channels might get some over the air games now too.
Well, no, the Sinclair channels get over the air games on, they get over the air games on, you know, on whatever network they have. But Sinclair, now that you mentioned it, they're in some cities. Sinclair does not own any stations in top 20 markets, but
okay.
You have places like Cincinnati, Baltimore, places like that, that they do own, like, well, San Antonio, here's that. It's funny you mention that. San Antonio has over-the-air games on CW35, which is owned by Sinclair, so they may put some on that you may get more, because they also have a deal with another channel, so you may see things like that happen. Now that you mentioned, you know, I was about to poo-poo that idea, but no, it, and you may see a name change, because remember all those channels back in the 90s, Fox and Comcast bought all the channels that were Sports Channel America, or they bought all the regional, like Home Team Sports, Home Sports Entertainment, Prime Ticket, and then they, well, originally Prime Star bought it, and they called them like Prime Sports Southwest for about a year or two, and then Fox stepped in. Fox and Comcast bought those channels. So you may see something like, I don't know, Sports Southwest, who knows, but they may figure out a way to keep the Fox name. I don't know.
Now we are
down to about a couple minutes here, but Chris, you might want to tease the other media story, and we'll hit it next week.
Yeah, okay. What it is we're going to be talking about Mike Francesa, and we will definitely get to it next week, and we're going to talk about his misjudgment of the whole Giant. Piling on, I would say you'd give him a 15-yard penalty for a late hit on the Giant. There's questions about what the Giants did in the draft. But okay, this was not one of them, and you know we will talk about it.
I can sum it up real quick. What he said basically, Corey Valentine of the Giants, sixth round draft pick, was giving somebody directions or getting directions at a, you know, he was out partying, celebrating he was drafted, and he went out to a car. He was out of the car. Him and his buddy were shot. His buddy died. He was hit in the shoulder. Mike Francesa went on and said, "How can the Giants do this? Character issues. How can they do that?" And you know, not even realizing what happened. So that's basically it. There's audio of it out there. Hopefully we'll find it. But
yeah, maybe next week we'll have some of that.
And Sean, you got about a minute to do the plugs.
Okay.
All right. Well, first of all, we have Robbie the Robot. He will be rocking you tonight after this show. But you can, of course, check us out, downloading it, legendoldies.com, or you can go to Worldwide Space Legend in your podcatcher and then select Sports Lounge Live. That's how you can get it. Or you can get it at 773-572-7715, which is also where you can leave your comments and questions. If you're listening on the phone, you just press 7 to rewind, 8 to pause, 9 to fast forward. And if you're listening, you hang up, you call back in, it just leaves right off from where you left off. And it's on the Talk Shop podcast, number 4712-432-6498.